Good morning. Court Radio is now in session.
Welcome to Court Radio.
Call 1-800-359-1479.
And the lines are alight.
When you've got legal questions.
Do I have any legal recourse?
What are my rights in this situation?
Is that valid?
And I'm just wondering, what is the statute of limitations?
We've got the answer.
You can whip your pictures out in court and say, liar, liar, pants on fire.
Right. This is Court Radio.
Let me go get the popcorn. This sounds like fun.
And now, here's your host, Dean Weitzman.
Good morning and welcome to Court Radio. I'm Dean Weitzman, your host for 1 hour of legal entertainment. That's right, Court Radio, where we'll answer your question. If something happened to you this week, if you've been involved in an accident, if you know somebody who possibly has been the victim of medical malpractice, this is the place to come to ask your questions. Anything, landlord, tenant, your grandmother stole your soup, we'll figure it out. Joined in the studio with my co-host, the one and only, David M. Rappaport.
Good morning. Oh, hey, we're hot on the mic here. Woo!
My co-host and buddy in crime. Well, or answering crime.
Stole your soup?
Soup,
what,
yeah.
What is that?
Listen, folks, if you're listening to David and I, this is Court Radio. You can reach us at 215-263-1003. This week, we have Jeffrey Gross.
An old-timer.
Yeah.
He's been here before, so we don't need to really formally introduce him in any special way whatsoever.
Well, but he's, you know, Jeff, he takes a special place in our hearts. He's a sponsor of Court Radio. Folks, you get a little bit of Court Radio each week because Jeffrey Gross is a sponsor of this fine establishment. Thank you, Jeffrey Gross.
You're welcome. Good morning.
You know, you're like Harry Hanukkah. You bring a little bit of Court Radio to the folks of Philadelphia every Sunday morning.
Ho, ho, ho.
Jeff is a specialist. He won't call himself a specialist, but I will. He focuses and concentrates. These are acceptable words by the Bar Association, I think.
Right.
He focuses and concentrates his practice on workers' compensation. He represents injured workers. And that's what we're going to be talking about today. There's aspects of that that I think are, people don't really understand it. And we're going to get into it in great detail momentarily. And we work synergistically over at My Philly Lawyer with Jeff, because we're representing folks who've been involved in accidents, who have third-party cases, who are suing the culpable party for their pain and suffering, while Jeff, side-by-side, lockstep with us, is representing them on their workers' compensation claim.
Yes, sir, and I appreciate all the work that you throw my way.
Thank you. Thank you very much. but if folks want to reach you for their workers' comp case, where would they reach you at?
Directly on my phone, which is 215-512-1500. I also have a website, which is www.phillaworkerscomp.com.
There you go. See, normally we weren't allowing that individual endorsement, but you've earned the right,
well,
Jeffrey
now,
Gross.
Now he pays for it.
Yeah.
You haven't earned anything. You pay for it.
Well, it's earning it in a sense.
Folks,
if you're listening to David, Jeff, and I, we're going to be talking about workers' compensation. If you've got a workers' comp question, today's the day to ask it. Get off your butts and pick up the phone and reach us at 215-263-1003. 215-263-1003. We'll talk to you about that. But there's a couple things. You know, David, I have a new neighbor at my house.
Okay.
And it's one of the Toll brothers.
Won't you be my neighbor?
Yeah. Yeah, it's one of the Toll brothers. They built.
Are you talking about that?
They built a giant house for themselves.
That gazillion dollar, yeah.
From what I understand, it's so weird. This guy, he's an older guy. He has a house in Florida and built the same identical house down to the brick, down to the mortise.
I've seen that.
I've
driven
in,
by
in
that.
Abington.
It's a huge land, plot of land, and then
that's the largest individual tract in Montgomery County, I believe. It's over 10 acres.
So what's the There's got to be a story behind it. You're bringing this up for some
The story is that the Toll Brothers ripped off their shareholders to the tune
of... How surprising.
Of, yeah. Well, they just settled their case for like $16 million because what happened is, you know, they had the housing bubble in 2005?
Right.
Well, they were selling shares of stock in 2005 and trying to convince people that they were uniquely positioned to weather the housing bubble. Like, it wasn't going to affect them. It would affect everybody else, but not them. And they sold $615 million worth of shares in their company.
Wow. And then those people all lost.
Oh, they lost their shirts.
Wow.
Yeah, they lost their shirts. So the Toll Brothers had to pay back $16 million. Does that seem fair?
My God,
they stole. They ripped the world off for $600 million. You know, or they overinflated their company for $600 million, and then they pay back $16 million. 10%.
It's not even. It's crazy.
It is crazy, but that's, you know, that's the way lawsuits work sometimes. Maybe there was some problems with the suit. You know, maybe they had a strong defense.
Well, there had to be some difficulties because I know that house. I'm familiar with it only because I've driven by it many times. Seems to take an exorbitant amount of time to build. I mean, this thing's taken 10 years to build. It's
crazy. Oh, yeah.
Crazy.
Well, it's a monument to them. 215-263-1003. The Toll Brothers have paid $16 million. And another case in the news, my friend, our friend, Shannon Spector.
Oh, God, yes. I heard about this. Yes.
Out in Pittsburgh this week, Shannon had a huge case. He and I were talking about it before he went out there, and he said, Dean, what do you think this case is worth? And, you know, when you talk about the worth of a case, there's several issues. One is that it has an emotional impact on a jury. And it's hard to determine sometimes because the emotional impact is so great. But this case, I knew that was going to pull on some heartstrings, and I said it was worth... Oh, you know, maybe he could get $100 million for this case. He could. Guess what?
$109 million.
This week, the jury came back with a $109 million verdict in Pittsburgh.
$61 million was punitive damages. So,
that's correct.
So while that's not really pulling at the heartstrings more than punishing the company for their
wrongdoing,
lax and reckless conduct. And
yeah, reckless, yes.
It was a power company issue with the lines that were not secured properly. They knew about it. It happened several times before.
Yeah.
And ended up, it was a horrible story.
Horrible story. We should tell people the story is that a woman outside of her home, a power line fell on her and she was electrocuted.
That's the short story. Yeah. It was a storm. And
And for like 20 minutes, they could not shut the power off. It was like and her children witnessed this.
Yeah.
It was a horrific accident. And it could have been avoided had the power company merely cleaned their lines when they installed them so they didn't corrode.
Now here's,
but it would cost them a little bit more to clean the lines, and they chose not to do that to save money. Saved money, and this woman lost her life. $109 million. Folks, when you sit on a jury, make sure that, you know, you really... You compensate the families of these victims substantially for, you know, because this is the one time, the one chance that a plaintiff, that an injured party has to be compensated.
The testament, I think, is that, at least I know from the story, you really have to be a stellar attorney and know your case and be confident to turn down the offer that they made of $50 million. They offered $50 million, which was pretty much what the jury gave for the damages in the case, because they gave 61 in punitive.
Did you read that somewhere?
Yeah.
Okay, because I was under... Well, when
he turned down when $50 million offer.
When Shannon and I last spoke about that, I think there was maybe, I don't know, it wasn't $50 million offer. But
I'm going by the paper.
Okay.
It's
a fluid thing, trials. You know, as you get closer and closer to the jury deciding your case, the defendants, on if your case is strong and you've made your case, will begin to make bigger and bigger offers.
Right, and they must have... smelled a rat there. But, you know, there's no way to effectuate change without a big verdict like this. You're going to see, you may see a lot of articles now about, runaway juries, and this is ridiculous. But this is a jury of our peers, normal people, giving that kind of money because they think that it's not only warranted, but needed. And who are we to say it's not? This is the only thing that companies listen to.
David, we got Benita on the phone who called last week, and we're going to get her on first and foremost. Benita, welcome from Germantown. You have an employment payment question.
Yes. Good morning. How are you?
We're fine, thanks. What's your question?
My question is, from 2010, I was working for a friend of mine. He had his own company. It was called JBM, and it was a cleaning company, and I was his executive assistant. And the thing was, he was supposed to pay his employees every 2 weeks, and I wouldn't get paid until the job was complete. So when the job was complete, he never paid me. I have everybody's, I was in charge of hiring. I have everybody's applications.
Oh, let me ask you a question. Did you say JBM?
Yes.
Like Junior Black Mafia?
Yes, but it was a janitorial service.
Wow, that's a crazy. He should be sued just for a dumb acronym. Yeah, I mean,
exactly.
I don't know. Maybe I'm showing my age, but that's a dumb acronym for a company. Okay, well, listen, what you got is a simple contract dispute. You know, he promises to pay you $422,000 for your 2 weeks of wages. You've got proof of that. He hasn't paid you. I say you can go right. By the way, is the company still in business?
I heard that it wasn't in business. I'm not actually sure.
Yeah, with that acronym, it's not a surprise.
I see him on the web here, just a name and a phone number, and there's no other like reference to them, so they might not be in business.
I even sent him a certified letter.
Yeah. Sometimes, Benita, what you have to do is you have to sue them. So you go to municipal court in Philadelphia, and you file your lawsuit for the amount of money he owes you, and the court will have a hearing. And probably, a lot of times, in order to avoid a hearing, if somebody has some assets, they'll call you to try to resolve it. And that's kind of people's court down there, municipal court. They'll help you file it. They'll you know, you just have to give them the address, the last address you have for the company, and lay down on paper why he owes you the money, and bada boom, you'll have yourself a hearing. And you know, if he's got something to give, he'll probably call you and make an offer.
Okay, so it's not too late.
Nope.
Okay.
All right. Take care, Benita.
Thank you very much. You too.
Yep. 215-263-1003. Let's talk to Jason from Brookhaven, who's got a workers' comp question. Hey, Jason, welcome to Court Radio.
How you doing? Good morning.
Good morning to you. You got a question for Jeff?
Yes. At the beginning of the year, I got injured on my job. I received workers' comp while I was out. I got surgery also while I was out. Do I still have an individual case, or is everything okay as long as I receive workman's comp?
Good morning, Jason. That's a very good question. It's really, really important that you know what your rights are, and it's clear to me by you asking me that question that you don't know what your rights are, because they, the workers' comp insurance carrier, or your employer, don't want you to know what your rights are, and you don't. And it's very important that you contact me, and I will enlighten you as to what your rights are, but you should know that they should have sent you some forms within 21 days from the date that you had that injury, and those forms will dictate what the responsibility of the employer is. It will set forth what they're responsible for, the type of injury, the amount of payment, and just so you're aware, those benefits should continue unless there's a change in your situation. And what I would ask that you do is give me a call after the show, and I'd be happy to go through those rights with you specifically. But if you take a look, there should be a form that you received called a Notice of Compensation Payable. It's a real important form. Go to your file materials and just take a look at what and make sure you have that form. And that form will set forth on it what the injury was. And I guarantee you, if it was done in January when you had your injury and you subsequently had surgery, I guarantee you that description of injury is incorrect. 99% of the time, those descriptions that are set forth on paper are incorrect, and they should be addressed and they should be changed to the appropriate injury. But I'd like to take a look at that with you and tell you what the value of your claim is for purposes down the road of possible settlement.
So, hey, Jason, you also may have, and you asked the question, and I'm going to give you the short answer. You may have a third-party case for pain and suffering, and that will depend on what caused your injury and whether there is a third party, somebody, not your employer, not a coworker, whose negligence contributed to your accident. If you can identify somebody, for instance, if you had a slip and fall accident, if one has a slip and fall accident coming into work on ice and snow as we're entering the winter season, and their employer is in a building where there's other employers in there, and they have, let's say, a independent contractor who cleans the parking lot area for the owner of the building, you may have a case against the owner of the building, and you may have a case against the independent contractor. What you will not have is a case against your employer for pain and suffering. So if the only party, and you don't always know this, but if the only party who caused you to have an injury is you, a fellow worker, or your employer, then the answer is no, you don't have a third-party case. But you still have a workers' comp case. You still need protection for the workers' comp aspect of that case. And give Jeff a call at 215-512-1500.
512-1500.
Thanks, Jason, for calling Court Radio.
All right, thank you.
All right, folks, this is Court Radio, where we answer your questions, David and I, one at a time. You only get one question, but we'll do our best to answer it. David and I at Court Radio every Sunday morning. You can find us during the week at www.courtradio.com. And you can also find me during the week at myphillylawyer.com, where I am patiently toiling each and every day. Snicker, snicker,
had to laugh at that. Patiently toiling, yes.
Well, I'm toiling. Very rarely am I patient. I'll be the first to admit that.
There's two words that I never think of, Dean. Patience and toiling. There are two words that never come into the mind of that.
All right, let's talk to Debbie Ann from West Philly. Good morning, Debbie Ann. How are you? And welcome to Court Radio.
Good morning. I'm good, thank you. I share a driveway with a rude neighbor who likes to block it with other cars, and we can't get in or out at different times. What should we do?
Well,
interesting.
Yeah.
You share it, yeah. So it's a common driveway.
You could always, is it a common driveway by deed? I mean, do you actually have an easement on each other's property? Okay. So, well, I guess, you know, you could, take matters into your own hand and call a tow truck and just have them start pulling cars out of there and removing them because they're on your property. But probably not a good idea. you could call licenses and inspections to make a complaint, and they'd probably cite your neighbor for a violation of some statute or regulation. Call the police, ask them to ticket them. You could also, send a letter, I suppose, to your neighbor and explain to them that, take a picture. Pictures are worth 1,000 words. I say to my clients all the time, did you get a picture of the accident? Did you get a picture of where the cars were, immediately following before they were moved and stuff like that? And so I'd say, no matter what you do, whether you're going to send a letter, call the police, call licenses and inspections, whatever you do, I think that the most important thing you could do is take a couple pictures demonstrating clearly that the cars are parked and they're blocking your driveway, because that's going to come in handy, that evidence, no matter which way you end up going down the road, as proof of what you're claiming. What do you think, David?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what else. I guess there could be some sort of action you could file if it comes to that point, and this would be a last resort, but some type of action to I don't know if it's partitioning is what I'm thinking of, some way of addressing the issue so that the person doesn't have the ability to just commandeer the entire driveway.
Yeah, well, I mean,
partitioning it or assessing.
When David talks about an action, what he's saying in layman's terms is you could file suit. You could sue your neighbor for damages for your pain and suffering,
encroaching on your property.
Property encroachment.
Yeah.
A PE complaint. and you could do that in municipal court, in small claims court down in Philadelphia.
And but again, no matter which way you go, I think it starts with a photo. And if I were you, what I would do, I would take a couple of photos and document it, and I'd send a letter. That'd be my first foray. I'd send a letter to the neighbor, yeah. Get it on, in writing that you're attempting to work with them, and show them the photo with the letter.
How many properties are there affected by this? How many people have access?
There are two properties.
Okay, so it's just the two of you. All right. Yeah, I mean, I think trying. I assume you've tried to do it amicably. You've spoken
yes,
with the person,
but
right?
Okay.
Yeah, well, I mean, you have a deed, and so the police can certainly enforce your deed for you. The problem is they have a deed, too, so I don't know how the police would handle that, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I'm not sure either, but again, photo,
right,
and if you did like a series of photos where you took one today and you sent the letter, and then a week later they did it again, you took another photo, because ultimately if you end up going into a court to complain about this and to ask for money damages or to get the court to force them to stop this, having a series of photos with a date stamp on it showing that this is a regular occurrence and not just, because they'll try to maybe paint you as just a complaining neighbor, you know, like when I was a kid, we would play ball outside the house and there was always this older neighbor who would scream and at her window that we were too loud. We were kids having fun. It was summertime, you know. So you don't want to be painted as just being a complainer who doesn't have a basis for your complaints. And that's why having a few photos would be really good to show, hey, listen, I'm a good neighbor. I don't mind cooperating, but look what these folks have done. And they didn't do it once. They did it four or five times. Here are my photos. That's my advice to you, dear. Have a great Sunday, and thanks for calling Court Radio. 215-263-1003. How about you, David? Did you ever have neighbors who were...
Oh, God, yeah. I had a neighbor. I have a funny story with that real quick.
Go ahead.
I lived in a semi-detached twin house in Northeast Philadelphia. So that's...
wealthy.
Yeah, please.
Wealthy.
Wealthy.
Come on.
Semi-detached twin, which means...
I didn't have a screen door. What are you talking about, well, semi-detached?
It was not hardly wealthy, but, you know, comfortable.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, we lived... I have no complaints about my life growing up. I mean, my parents... We lived in a nice little neighborhood, but anyway...
You better say that. Eleanor is probably listening.
Eleanor. Janice.
Janice, sorry.
And you called her Eunice before, was Eunice. The name you used, but it's... she is listening.
Okay.
Anyway.
Janice Rappaport.
There you go.
Gave David and his sister a fine growth life.
Well, look at me now. Look how I turned out. It's all her doing.
In a semi-detached home. Go ahead.
Anyway, so the house is attached to us.
Yes.
They had, of course, a fenced-in back, a small backyard, but they fenced it. My backyard was not fenced because we were the, you know, we all-inclusive. Anyone could come in and so...
You couldn't afford a fence.
Right. So we would play in the backyard and if, you know, a ball or something went over the fence, I'd have to climb over it. I'd have to do this. Also, as you know, Dean, I'm a musician. So
you
I play drums.
Yes.
Which they did.
Did you play drums back then?
Yes, I did. So they
did your
were,
parents set you up in your garage or something?
No,
with
in
drum
my room.
Set?
In my, well, in my basement. And the neighbors could hear it. Anyway, to make a long story short... They were so crazed at just youth around the neighborhood that they would go to the extent of putting grease, like garage door grease, on the fence so that if we tried to climb over the fence, we'd get it all over ourselves. Now, you know as well
Lord.
As I do what kids will do in retaliation for that.
What'd you do, David? The statutes run. Just quickly tell us what you do.
We put grease all over. Every door handle of their entire house had grease on it. You know, of course, Halloween and all those nights, eggs were plentiful and thrown all over the place. Nothing like huge, nothing destructive.
Yeah, no, funny kid
yes.
stuff.
Kids exactly.
Stuff. Back
exactly.
then, it was good, clean fun.
Yes.
All right, well, I do believe
we
the
terrorized
statute...
terrorized them, basically.
I do believe the statute is run on that, David, so I think you're safe. But 215-263-1003. Folks, when we come back from break, and we're going to take break just in one short minute here. When we come back from break, Jeff and I are going to get into workers' comp liens. And what I mean by that is when you have a case, a third-party case, like I represent you, and I get you barrels full of money, some of that has to go back to your employer who's paid you wages.
Barrels.
And wages and your medical bills. And you know, sometimes you complain about that when I have to do that. But there's instances when the law just says it's a must. And Jeff and I are going to talk about that as soon as we come back from break. Get all your workers' comp questions together. Give us a call here at the studio, 215-263-1003. We'll be right back after these sponsored breaks.
It happened suddenly. You fell hard and your body's broken. You haven't worked in months. Your medical bills are piling up and there's no one to take care of your kids. I'm Dean Weitzman of My Philly Lawyer. Call us at 215-227-2727. For more than 30 years, we've battled for people just like you by making insurance companies pay. Call My Philly Lawyer at 215-227-2727. We fight for people who can't fight for themselves. My Philly Lawyer, when winning matters most.
If you've been injured, the road to recovery can seem long. At United Therapy Centers, we're here to help. Call us 877-510-7764. With leading-edge technology and our team approach, we provide the highest level of patient care with a pain management program developed just for you. If you've been injured, we can help. Call United Therapy Centers toll-free 877-510-7764. United Therapy Centers, get on the road to recovery.
Are you in a financial legal squeeze? Unable to work because of an accident with your legal case still not settled? Lawsuit Funding Solutions can help you pay the bills while you wait. If you have a pending lawsuit, call 877-697-7352. It can take time for a lawsuit to settle. Lawsuit Funding Solutions is here to help you get back on track. And you won't owe them a thing if your case doesn't settle or you don't receive a judgment. Get out of the squeeze today. Call 877-697-7352.
If you've been injured on the job and are entitled to workers' comp, you need someone fighting for you from the start. Call Jeffrey Gross, attorney at law. Don't rely on your employer or insurance company to get it right. Call 215-512-1500. If you're entitled to workers' comp or it's being challenged, Jeffrey Gross can help get the money you deserve, and he won't get paid unless you get paid. Call 215-512-1500. Jeffrey Gross, attorney at law, representing Pennsylvania's injured workers for more than 20 years.
Need more legal answers? Here's more Court Radio with your host, Dean Weitzman.
Okay, we're back. Back from break. And that was a fabulous commercial,
that
Jeff.
Was a, hey, let's give that a little applause for that.
Yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. You won't get paid until they get paid.
Yeah, I don't like that part of it, but it's the way it is.
It is. Yeah. That's, you must be the only attorney in Philadelphia who doesn't get paid until his client gets paid.
I don't think so.
All right, but you're the best. When it comes to workers' comp, you have no equal.
Thank you. I really appreciate that.
I mean that from my heart, you know. All right, so folks, if you've got your workers' comp questions, give us a call. The lines are alight, and we're going to get to you just momentarily. But Jeff and I, we got to get into a little bit of workers' comp talk.
Yes, you were talking about what we call subrogation. It's a real long word. But it simply means that when you get paid workers' compensation, when you get paid your workers' comp benefits, including your wage loss and your medical benefits that are paid, and then you have a third-party claim that, for instance, you are handling, and you are successful in the third-party claim against somebody other than the employer, then the workers' comp carrier has a right to get that money back or a portion of that money back that they spent and paid you and paid on your behalf. However, there are exceptions that everybody should know about.
Yeah, you know, I actually engaged an exception this week. We represented an individual in, actually in this particular case, he was injured in Bucks County. He worked for a private company that collected trash. And so every day he would get off of the back of the truck, you know the routine. He'd walk to the trash cans or bags and bring them to the truck and throw them in, get back up on the truck and drive to the next house. And on this day, he gets off of the truck and steps into a hole that was, I'd say, no bigger than like a number 10 can, like a coffee can size hole. But the front of his foot went into this hole. It was deep hole. Cavernous hole, and he twisted and fractured his ankle. And And so he could not walk anymore. He couldn't jump up onto and off of the truck. And he became my client, and I referred him to you for workers' comp benefits.
That's right.
And you represented him. You got him his wages every 2 weeks, I guess, for a long, long time. And then it culminated in a settlement. That's right. What we're talking about this time of year. You got the guy a settlement.
Right. We got him a settlement, and it was a substantial settlement. And then it went back to you for further handling against the party that was at fault for the accident.
And I'll tell you, let me say, because I know we can't talk about the person's name, and we're not going to identify, it's confidential, but the total package that you were able to achieve for this gentleman, including his medical benefits, was over $130,000. You got him over $130,000. So we're faced with a lien, okay? The comp carrier said, the workers' compensation carrier said to me, "Hey Dean, when you settle his case with the at fault parties, we've got $130,000 that Jeff took from us, and we want it back." That's the subrogation.
That's right. And guess what? In this particular case, that was not going to happen. And you want to know why? There was an exception to that rule of having the insurance carrier or the workers' comp carrier getting paid back. And that rule was, if you have a third-party case against a political subdivision or an agency of the Commonwealth, like the Commonwealth itself or SEPTA or the City of Philadelphia or any municipality, there is an exception that says that they do not get their right of subrogation back.
Yeah, it's the Frazier versus Workers' Compensation Appeal Board case.
Very good.
Now, just to be fair, I like to explain things because I assume people don't really know. The workers' comp, you settled $130,000. That was for only future pay for the person not being able to work and or future medical, correct?
Yeah, let's be clear.
Yeah, let's be clear about what the money's for.
The guy got paid benefits up until the settlement date. The guy got paid medical benefits on his behalf, so it was a lot more than that. And then there was the settlement,
right?
So you
for
have
future.
To, that's correct. And okay. Then you have to figure in the total amount that was paid to him and on his behalf, and then they're entitled to their money back. But not in this case. And the reason is that the Supreme Court of Pennsylvania, that came down with this decision in October of this year of 2012, said that you cannot make a claim for subrogation if the third party happens to be the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania or any one of its political subdivisions or agencies. And that means, like SEPTA, they are an agency of the Commonwealth.
And I sued, in this case, I sued the township that had the land where he fell, and I also sued the Water Authority, which was a separate entity, because there was actually a pipe underground. This wasn't just an ordinary pothole. This was a hole caused by water that had leaked from a pipe and caused a what's the name of that thing when you
sinkhole.
A sinkhole. Thank you, David. I had a little sinkhole. That's why you're here,
That's
sir.
That's why I'm here.
Okay. I had a little sinkhole, and they knew about it. They knew about it. Like, I was able to prove that weeks and months before they knew about it, but nobody wanted to take responsibility. You know what, folks? That's what this is all about. That's what David and I and Jeff do. We force people to take responsibility. Because you know what? Nobody likes to say, for some reason, I don't understand it, people don't like to say, "I'm sorry," and then back that up with some action. You can't just say, "I'm sorry. I'm sorry that I caused you to break your ankle. Here's money so that you can be compensated appropriately." Okay, you might get them to say, "I'm sorry." Doctor might come in, a nurse may come in and say to the family, "We're really sorry." And that's cool. I'm all right with that. But do they come in with a bag of cash and say, "I'm sorry"? Heck no. That's where you need to get David and I and Jeff involved in the case. 215-263-1003. Let's talk to Danny from Allentown, who's got a question about a third-party lien. Hey, Danny, welcome to Court Radio.
How are you doing today?
All right. We're fine, thanks, and happy to have you. What's your question?
I have a similar situation with a third-party lien. Essentially what happened, I was in a car accident. I essentially settled with the party at fault insurance company for around $40,000 or something like that. Then my motor's insurance covered $5,000 of my bills. At that point, I didn't understand the limitations and things like that of medical bills and medical costs. Essentially, my back surgery came out to about $140,000. My lawyer then was able to turn around and basically sue my own personal motorist insurance, and now my private insurance from my job that covered the back surgery is actually asking for $30,000 of my settlement from this last settlement. I was wondering how is that possible?
Okay, let me quickly summarize because you were all over the place, and I'm going to help. That's all right. I'm going to help you with this. So Jeff, he has a third party case. He sued the person who caused the accident, and he's got over $140,000 worth of medical bills. Obviously, this accident happened in the course and scope of his employment, so his employer paid for the medical benefits and probably his salary. So he's got a big lien, and he's now pursuing a case against his own underinsured motorist benefits.
So there is another exception that they can't get back.
The only difference there was it had nothing to do with the work. It was just I was just driving my vehicle, or a young man ran a red light. It was just
it was his health motorist. Insurance through work.
Yeah, it was motorist on motorist. Right. It had nothing to do with
his health insurance.
Health insurance.
Hold
yes.
Hold on. Same thing.
Same thing.
Yeah.
You've got, and you don't have a workers' comp claim, but your employer provided you with health insurance, and your health insurance paid for your medical expenses.
Correct.
Okay.
If it's your own private vehicle and your own private insurance that you paid for and not funded by anyone else.
Okay.
And if the medical that was paid on your behalf, the health insurance, was not part of an ERISA plan, then
it's complicated.
It gets complicated. That's why you need to call us.
Yeah.
But if, as long as that health insurance was not part of an ERISA plan, they can't get money back against your recovery on your UIM or underinsured motorist claim, because your underinsured motorist claim was funded by you, not by anybody else. And if it was funded by you, there's an exception to that subrogation rule. And that means that they can't get their money back. But the most important thing here, and this is a federal protective right, the federal government has set up something called an ERISA lien, and that applies to all health insurance carriers that are subject to that, and it depends on the funding of the health insurance, and that's what the big question is going to be in your case.
Okay, you said it was called an ERISA lien?
ERISA-based plan, and if your health insurance is one of those, then they do have a right to get money back.
Well, yes, they do, and this is coming up all the time nowadays, and many, many employees are covered under an ERISA plan, and you very well may be covered under an ERISA plan, and in which case the carrier takes the position not only that they're entitled to get some of their money back, they're entitled to get all their money back before you get anything.
Correct. They're actually suing for all their money back.
Yeah.
That's what the lien is for.
Now listen. This is, I mean, we see this all the time, and I got to tell you that my personal position is that everybody needs to play nicely in the play yard, okay?
Right.
And so I take a position, I don't care if it's ERISA, MNISA, Kapalissa, you're not getting all my client's money, period, end of story. And if you want all his money, then you're going to have to fight for it like ever. And so I put the money in my escrow account. Okay, because I can't just hand it back to my client because the court could decide against you.
Correct. That's what he's done so far, my lawyer.
I put the money into my escrow account, and I tell them, sue me. Sue my client. And you know what? I had a case this past month where a little girl was, had a bad accident. She has a lot of medical bills. It's an ERISA plan. This plan from Texas says we want all the money. I put all the money into my escrow account, and we ended up going before a judge. And we're still waiting for the decision, and I'll bring this back up at a later date, but they refused to deduct anything off of their lien. And I said, no, you're going to take a third, at least a third off, because that's what it cost my client in attorney's fees to create this fund of money. And I think it's only fair that, you know, you share and share alike. They're like the little bullies of the play yard. And ERISA plan, and this attorney is the biggest bully. I mean, he's like, I know ERISA, and I'm the greatest expert on ERISA in Pennsylvania. Well, meanwhile, he talks, you want to go to sleep. I mean, the guy's got zero personality. and the judge said to him, listen, pal, you know, I got to take care of the kid. I don't care about you and how much you know about ERISA. There's a new case that came out. It's not on ERISA. Mm-hmm. It's on other medical plans, non-ERISA plans. And it says just what we're saying. It says you have to share and share alike. You don't get all the money. You gotta take a deduction. And we think it's going to apply to ERISA, too, if it ever gets to the Supreme Court, which it should shortly. Of course, the Supreme Court is full of, you know, conservatives, but we'll see what happens.
Now, one question. Now, my injury that happened... It basically re-aggravated a pre-existing condition that I had. I always had back issues, but with the accident that occurred, that's when I had to have a spinal fusion done because it re-aggravated the old injury. Do they take that into account at all or anything?
Well,
like that?
No, because your compensation for this particular event. Is supposing that it's compensating you for all of the injuries caused by this event, which is the aggravation.
David, doesn't this border on a second question?
Well, I don't think he ever asked the first question. There was no actual question asked. I was thinking about that. I gave that thought before we.
I don't know.
I don't remember him actually asking a question. He was just giving us. You guys took it over. You know?
I think he snuck one in.
He did. He snuck it in. He was smart. Yeah, he was smart.
He was a smart second questioner. All right. Anyway, Mr. Allentown, thank you for calling Court Radio and have a great Sunday. 215-263-1003. We're in the studio with Jeffrey Gross.
Good morning.
Good morning, Jeffrey.
You know, at this time of year, by the way, Dean, people like to get money, right?
Absolutely.
It's Christmas.
They're calling me all the time.
Right. I think we should pay some attention to settlements.
Right. Well, Jeff, I have a question about settlements because we've been talking about them. I think it's only fair to enlighten everyone as to what is the effect. Okay, it's great to say we got someone 130, whatever, but once you settle... I assume that's presupposing you're not going to be getting any more money in the future from your employer.
Well, hold on a second.
All right. Well, let's talk about that, my friend. Let's talk.
I got many cases.
Okay.
There's different ways of settling a case for workers' compensation. So you have a case against your employer, and you had surgery, and it doesn't look like you're getting better, unfortunately. So they're continuing to pay you wage loss and continuing to pay your medical bills. They do not want to continue doing that, so they want to settle because you're bleeding them dry. The way that we can do this is basically two ways. We can settle the claim for a lump sum and get rid of the entire claim, which may not be in your best interest, or it may, but that will give you the most amount of money you could get from the workers' comp carrier. However, there is another way to do this. The other way is to settle it for wage loss only. And that means that instead of settling the entire claim, you just settle the wage loss, the future wage loss alone, and you keep intact the medical benefits so that the employer remains responsible for the medical benefits. And then what happens is you get this lump sum of money, and then you get this ongoing medical coverage. And at some point in the not-too-distant future, when they realize they're paying a lot of money out for medical bills, they may come back and say, listen, we would like to settle the medical portion of your case. So when you say that it's one and done, it's not necessarily one and done. You might get another shot at the apple if it's only a settlement for wage loss benefits.
See, this is why you're our guy.
That's right. That's why.
Because you don't treat clients like cookie cutting, you know, like this is a one-stop shop here and everybody's going to be treated the same way.
That's right. It can't be.
You give everybody their individual attention.
That's right.
215-263-1003. Let's talk to Rico from West Philly, who's got an unlawful termination question. Hello, and welcome to Court Radio.
Good morning, gentlemen.
So what's your question, Rico?
Okay, I've been working at a company, the Home Depot, for 4 years.
Uh-huh.
And I had a situation where they terminated me due to my supervisor gave me permission to change a late time. It is a form that you sign to change the time, and he does it for a lot of folks that are employed. So when I asked to change the time to prevent me from being marked late, he says, yes, he signed the form, and he turned it in. 2 weeks later, I was brought into the office, and I was terminated. And my manager stated to me that he has to let me go because it's called stealing time. And I said, well, I got permission from my supervisor to change the time. And I said, he does it for many others. You know, I've just asked for one particular, this time, the first time. He says, well, we can't allow that when we have to let you go. I says, okay, well, he says, when you sign a termination form, I said, no, I don't agree with the terms. Just give me a copy so I can leave. He said, I can't give you a copy unless you sign it. So I left out, and that was that. So I want to know what the law on, you know, being terminated due to the supervisor gave permission to change the time.
Okay, well, here it is, and it's not going to be good news on the eve of Christmas, but the news is that Pennsylvania is an at-will state. That means that you work at the will of your employer, and if your employer fires you for any reason, even a bad reason, even a dumb reason, even what sounds to me, in your case, like an unfair reason, they're entitled to do so, as long as it's not a discriminatory reason. So, and you didn't talk about, you know, you weren't the only black guy who was fired. You weren't the only guy who was fired. Those would be, you know, discriminatory bases based on your sex or your race.
See, this is a little different, though, because it's almost like the idea of, your supervisor was doing something wrong. He was changing the time for people. The fact that he was doing it for others, it really isn't a good argument, because you're kind of arguing he was doing the wrong thing and he didn't do the wrong thing for me too. I don't know if that argument really gets anywhere. You know what I mean? The bottom line is they can just say, you know, we don't want you here anymore, and there you go, bye bye.
Yeah, it's unfortunate, but I don't think now. But you bring up an important topic and one that I want to address with Jeff about a retaliatory firing, because a lot of folks, when they pursue their workers' comp case, they're hesitant to pursue a workers' comp case because they think their employer is going to get angry with them. And let them go. Can they let them go if they're injured on the job?
Well, they can let them go generally, meaning they don't have to hold the position open forever. It would work an undue hardship to the employer, so they get rid or replace you with another worker, and they can certainly do that. No one's requiring the company to lose money just because you got hurt and they need to continue on with life. However, if they're firing you for a retaliatory reason, meaning they are firing you because you're making a worker's comp claim and they don't like that, that is illegal, and that is subject to a wrongful termination claim.
Tough to prove, I would think, but
tough to prove. It depends on how they word it. Depends on what happens. Their actions will speak louder than their words. They will usually write a letter saying, we really enjoyed you working for us, but I'm sorry, due to economic considerations, we have to terminate your position.
And that happens 24 hours after you were injured on the
job.
So everyone knows out there, if you're working and you have a work-related injury and you're out on comp and months down the road you get terminated, and this happens a lot, if that happens to you, your workers' compensation claim increases in value, meaning for purposes of a settlement, you can't go back to a job because the job is no longer available to you. You have a much larger ability to get a
and
much
why is
larger
that?
Settlement.
But there's a reason for that, because if your employer has some other job for you, even though it wasn't your job, you got to give it a shot.
If you're a laborer and you lift bricks all day long and you get hurt and your back is killing you and you can't, and by the way, I hurt my back last night, and your back is killing you and you can't go back to work and you can't lift bricks ever, ever again and you need surgery, your job could say to you, hey, buddy, come on back and sit in our office. We'll pay you the same rate. All you have to do is sit there for 8 hours, and they are off the hook for comp if they do something like that.
But same scenario, except that your employer has no job for you, no office job, and in fact terminates your position. Can they then say, well, you have to go work for Jeff Gross because he has an office job?
They can't do that. They have to do something called a vocational workup, which is extremely complicated. And they have to be successful in doing a workup on you from a vocational standpoint that shows that there are jobs out there in the area, in the geographic area that you live in, that are within your medical restrictions and within your vocational abilities, and then they can make that argument. But let me tell you one thing, Dean.
Yes, Jeffrey.
That is just an argument, and I have never, well, let me repeat this.
I have never lost that argument.
I have never lost that case.
Whoa!
Whoa, never.
Never.
Never, never,
never. Isn't there a song about that? N-E-V-E-R. Folks, if you're listening to Jeff and David and I, this is Court Radio, where we answer your questions every Sunday morning. Any legal question you got, we've got the answer. 215-263-1003. Let's talk to Tyrone from South Philly. Tyrone is a delivery driver. He has a car accident on the job involving a police car. Mm. He wants to know, and he is receiving workers' comp benefits. Can he bring a claim against the city of Philadelphia? Hey, Tyrone, welcome to Court Radio.
Hey, how you doing this morning?
We're doing great, thanks. Did I summarize your position accurately?
Yes, sir. Yes, you did.
All right. The answer, Tyrone, is yes. I could disconnect you now, and I've done my job, but I won't do that to you, Tyrone. Here's the full answer. Yes, of course you could sue the city of Philadelphia. I sue them all the time. Michael Nutter and I are best friends. He sends me money all the time. But here's the thing.
There's a big kicker, though.
The city has to be at fault. I don't know how your accident happened, but you can give us a call during the week at 215-227-2727. You know that number, Tyrone?
Yes, sir.
Of course.
I will give you a call in the morning.
All right. Now, listen. When you have a case against the city of Philadelphia, David, there's an extra step.
There's something called the Political Subdivisions Tort Claims Act. I know that's a big moniker there, but basically what it means is the king, you know, the city or the state or anyone else, but in this case the city, you have to jump through some more hoops to be able to recover, one of which is your injury needs to be a permanent injury, and you need to have a certain amount of medical expenses, and there's a couple other things like that. Plus, as Dean said, they have to be responsible, and sometimes this is a car accident, so we know they are responsible, but there's certain circumstances where they wouldn't be responsible, even if there's negligence and they caused your injury, like a slip and fall where you slipped on a banana on a City Hall's steps.
The banana peel,
they're
yes.
not going to be responsible for that.
But a cracked sidewalk.
A cracked sidewalk in City Hall, yes. If you
And we
on
know
it.
There's plenty of cracked sidewalks around City Hall right. nowadays. But they're building, they're building this magnificent new plaza out front. I can't wait. I mean, because we overlook that, and we see that all the time. They're doing some great work over there. But anyway, thanks for calling, and give us a call during the week. We'll definitely talk to you about your case. And you very well may have a good case. We'll see.
Thank you.
All right. 215-263-1003 is where we are today. And you can reach us all week long at courtradio.com if you have a question for David and I week in and week out. However, if you got potentially a case that you need to discuss, the best way to reach me is 215-227-2727. That phone is answered 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. 215-227-2727. And I'll give you a tip just for our Court Radio listeners. Not only is it answered 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, but moments after you call, an email is sent to my phone, and I see you called, and I respond immediately. Immediately. That's right. I or my crack team of attorneys. 215-227-2727. And Jeffrey Gross, the man who settles cases around Christmas time for his clients, what's the most memorable settlement you've had recently?
The most memorable settlement that I've had recently? That's a very good question. There's so many memorable settlements that I've had.
Uh-huh.
But I had a very large settlement recently with a guy that was confined to a wheelchair, and he was just unable to do much. And I convinced him it wouldn't be the best idea to settle out his medical benefits with the wage loss. So we just settled out the wage loss. I got him a lot of, I'm not even going to tell you how much I got him, but I got him a lot of money, more than your average settlement. And He still has his medical intact for future consideration.
And the largest settlement ever. Quickly.
That I settled?
Yes, ever.
$450,000.
Bam. And when you're talking workers' compensation, that number
lot,
is
yeah.
huge. Wow. 215-512-1500. That's Jeffrey's cell phone. He'll talk to you 24/7.
He answers it, actually. Right?
Yes, he does.
Personally.
Folks, thanks for listening to Court Radio. We've had a wonderful time bringing you some information this Sunday. We'll be back next Sunday, David and I, the same time, the same place.
Zippity-doo.
Thanks, David.
We'll be here.
All right. Have a great Sunday,
all
folks.
Right. Bye-bye.
The crash was horrible. You almost didn't make it, and now you're just hoping to be able to walk again. I'm Dean Weitzman of My Philly Lawyer. If you've been in a car, truck, or motorcycle accident, call us at 215-227-2727. For more than 30 years, we've battled for people just like you by making insurance companies pay. Call My Philly Lawyer at 215-227-2727. We fight for people who can't fight for themselves. My Philly Lawyer, when winning matters most.
If you've been injured, the road to recovery can seem long. At United Therapy Centers, we're here to help. Call us 877-510-7764. With leading-edge technology and our team approach, we provide the highest level of patient care with a pain management program developed just for you. If you've been injured, we can help. Call United Therapy Centers toll-free 877-510-7764. United Therapy Centers, get on the road to recovery.
Are you in a financial legal squeeze? Unable to work because of an accident with your legal case still not settled? Lawsuit Funding Solutions can help you pay the bills while you wait. If you have a pending lawsuit, call 877-697-7352. It can take time for a lawsuit to settle. Lawsuit Funding Solutions is here to help you get back on track. And you won't owe them a thing if your case doesn't settle or you don't receive a judgment. Get out of the squeeze today. Call 877-697-7352.
If you've been injured on the job and are entitled to workers' comp, you need someone fighting for you from the start. Call Jeffrey Gross, attorney at law. Don't rely on your employer or insurance company to get it right. Call 215-512-1500. If you're entitled to workers' comp or it's being challenged, Jeffrey Gross can help get the money you deserve, and he won't get paid unless you get paid. Call 215-512-1500. Jeffrey Gross, attorney at law, representing Pennsylvania's injured workers for more than 20 years.